Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Friday, May 14th. On today's episode of the Roundup, we're going to talk about Medicaid generally and Medicaid managed care specifically. To be honest, I really don't know much about Medicaid, and I know even less about Medicaid managed care. So I'm going to be taking lots of notes as we talk about trends in Medicaid enrollment, Medicaid expansion, new Medicaid managed care models, and new companies trying to create more value for Medicaid recipients. Today's lesson will be taught by Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you guys doing this morning? Dave?
I'm pumped to be discussing Medicaid. How about you?
Yeah, pumped is a good word. How about you, Julie? Are you pumped?
I'm pumped. And I got to say, I took my first business trip this week back on a plane and went to the East Coast, where I haven't been since, wait for it, fall of 2019. How crazy is that?
Wow. Have things changed since you've been there?
It does feel different, I'll say that.
Right. Dave, you left a bottle of wine in a check-in bag, right, and got busted?
I did. Didn't think twice about it.
Yeah, I got to remember that one when I hop on a plane. All right, thanks to both. Now, before we talk about all things Medicaid, as healthcare subject matter experts, does it drive you nuts when people confuse Medicare and Medicaid? Dave, what's your reaction when people mix up the two?
I think it's more inside healthcare baseball, to tell you the truth. It says more about healthcare generally than confused individuals. It's a little like people who say they don't like for-profit hospitals, but can't identify the tax status of their local hospital. At the end of the day, it's healthcare delivery and healthcare insurance. And I look forward to the time when all Americans have access to a broad range of insurance options and aren't confused.
Great. Thanks, Dave. Julie, how about you? Do your eyes roll when people don't know the difference between the two government health insurance programs?
They do. For me, it's a little more regional because in California, we call Medicaid Medi-Cal. So we've added yet another word that confuses people.
Well, it does bug me, and I'm always compelled to correct them. You know, Medicare is for the elderly, Medicaid is for the poor, and then I don't even try to explain dual eligibles. So,
how do you explain nursing homes then?
Yeah, I never use the phrase skilled nursing facility. They just don't get that.
No.
All right, let's talk Medicaid. Dave, what's the latest on Medicaid enrollment and spending, and what's your takeaways on those trends?
As Kai Rizdahl from Marketplace likes to say, my favorite NPR program, let's do the numbers. In the 2 years prior to the pandemic, so 2018 and 2019, back when Julie was traveling to the East Coast, Medicaid enrollment actually declined by 2.3 million people, from 73.4 million to 71.1 million. That's not really a surprise given how strong the economy was. Remember that. And its low unemployment levels and relatively high wage growth for low-income workers. As the pandemic began, there were just over 71 million people in Medicaid, and that number began to increase, not surprisingly, again, in February 2020. There's some noise in the November numbers between preliminary and early actual data, but it's safe to say that Medicaid enrollment grew between February and November 2020 by 8 million people. So from roughly 71 million to 79 million enrollees, and that was an 11% increase. December 2020 and January 2021 were the pandemic's worst 2 months, so it's reasonable to expect continued growth for both those months and the coming months well into 2021, particularly since there's a historic lag between economic recovery and Medicaid enrollment declines. Medicaid enrollment increased in every state, but there was wide variation. California had the lowest increase, enrollee growth of roughly 6%. Utah was the highest, with enrollment growth of 22%, It's important to note that Utah was a Medicaid expansion state in 2020. From a just a sheer population numbers perspective, these are huge numbers. When Medicaid enrollment peaks at some number above 80 million, you know, probably later this year, it may well represent at least a quarter of the U.S. population. Medicare, by contrast, as documented by CMS's handy-dandy fast fact sheet, covers roughly 63 million people. So think of that, 80 plus million to 63. The spending trends are murkier to assess since national health expenditure data from CMS in 2019 is the latest we have. And that doesn't include, obviously, Medicaid's 2020 enrollment spike because of COVID and unemployment and other associated factors. According to that 2019 NAG data, national health expenditure data, Medicaid spending grew 2.9% to $613.5 billion. Remember, this growth occurred with declining Medicaid enrollment. By contrast, Medicare spending grew 6.7% to roughly $800 billion, and that was with increasing enrollment. So simple math shows that pre-pandemic per capita Medicare spending is over 50% higher than pre-pandemic Medicaid per capita spending, $13,000 versus $8,600. My swag estimate is that 2020 Medicaid spending will exceed $700 billion. That's up from the $613.5 billion I mentioned earlier, so a huge increase. And that's based on enrollment growth and the fact that Medicaid enrollees were disproportionately hospitalized for COVID treatment because of their high levels of chronic disease. So we're going to see a big spike in Medicaid spending. And of course, it all gets even more complicated by Medicaid expansion states and the politics of that.
Lots of big numbers there. Julie, what's the latest on Medicaid expansion, waivers, work requirements? Where are any of those going under the Biden administration?
Well, we are still holding steady at 39 states, including DC, that have adopted Medicaid expansion, and 12 states that haven't. And that's increasingly relevant because the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021 that Biden passed provided a number of additional incentives for those 12 states that have not yet expanded Medicaid. So we could be on the brink of change there. You know, in 2021 to date, we've seen Kansas, Mississippi, North Carolina, and Wisconsin all initiate some sort of important step towards Medicaid expansion, with some others in various stages of activity. Of course, things are stalled in Florida, which can't say that's a surprise. Texas has been fairly silent on any forward progress. So 2021 will probably be a big year for defining what happens with Medicaid expansion in those states. There's also, interestingly, a new study published in Medical Care Research and Review with some researchers out of Colorado that found that Medicaid expansion under the ACA provided a financial boost to hospitals. And this is important because states are in the position where they need to make a really difficult call on a lot of financial decisions to protect their safety net hospitals. And those that are at highest risk of financial distress are many of those that are also serving large Medicaid populations and many of those that have been overwhelmed by the pandemic's impact on their finances. So this study is pretty interesting because it's the first to look at both IRS and CMS data, which, not shockingly, didn't always align, and mostly showed that uncompensated care costs declined by 28%. And the increase in hospitals' Medicaid shortfalls has been occurring more gradually, which is probably because Medicaid population is expanding as well because of the pandemic. On the work requirements, I think we all probably have seen that Biden rescinded permissions from both Michigan and Wisconsin to require Medicaid beneficiaries to either work or attend school or some sort of job training to enroll in Medicaid. So Biden is not long on the work requirements. And states like Arkansas and New Hampshire had similar requirements up and running. And Arkansas is actually fighting to keep these requirements in place in the U.S. Supreme Court right now. But we think that court's likely going to, you know, look to Biden's decision for guidance at this point.
Thanks, Julie. Interesting stuff. Dave, anything to add to Julie's comments?
I'm just enjoying the politics of Medicaid funding with Texas. In the last days of the Trump administration, they pushed through a waiver that essentially gave the Medicaid expansion dollars from the Affordable Care Act to Texas without having to say it's a Medicaid expansion state. And the Biden administration rescinded that in the last couple of weeks on the basis of there not having been due process, public hearings, and so on. So this is a rubber meets the road issue when it comes to healthcare funding and healthcare delivery, because it puts Texas under enormous pressure, financial pressure, to provide adequate Medicaid coverage, but without the benefit of the Medicaid expansion dollars. And obviously in the Rescue Act, they've put some more money in there to really try to entice non-Medicaid expansion states to jump in. So politics versus meeting actual human needs very much at a point of intersection. And it will be fascinating to watch that play out over the next few months.
And a lot of twists and turns. Thanks, Dave. Now let's talk about Medicaid managed care and Medicaid delivery innovation. Julie, what Medicaid managed care trends are you seeing? What problems are they trying to solve? And what progress are those solutions making?
Well, in Medicaid managed care, it's all about my favorite topic, telehealth. And the pandemic has led virtually all states to expand telehealth access with a special emphasis on behavioral health, reproductive and maternal and child health, dentistry, physical and occupational therapy, and pediatrics. So a lot of activity there. And of course, there continues to be really widespread interest in not only behavioral health, but care for special needs children, especially those that have difficulties getting actually out to their care or treatment. There's so much more inbound and home care that's really great for them. Rural health and just solving those access needs in so much of this country. And looking at specific needs to monitor the health status of patients, like for congestive heart failure, post-discharge, especially patients with a high frequency of hospitalization. And states also anticipate using telehealth to ensure that primary care providers have access to specialized consultation services. So we're seeing more of that continuum play out in primary care with telehealth, which is great. So we're seeing a lot of acceleration at the state level for Medicaid populations in the way that telehealth is not just for commercial populations anymore. And while there are concerns about whether the Medicaid population will use this newfound access, there's a huge push there, which is great. Then on the other side of things, we're seeing pretty interesting activity in Ohio, of all states. Ohio basically just announced a massive restructuring of care there for about 3 million low-income or disabled Ohioans. And they've hired 6 health plans effectively to help coordinate the federal state health insurance there. And they talk about their goals for reimagining the system and focusing on people and not just the business of managed care. So this is a very kind of progressive talk track, that's for sure. And some of the usual suspects among the gang of 6 that were hired are AmeriHealth Caritas Ohio, Anthem, Humana, Molina, United, all their local plans there in Ohio. Notably missing was Aetna. They didn't make the cut. And Ohio is effectively asking these plans to coordinate and not compete. And that's an explicit part of this arrangement. And they'll look at everything from fairly extensive program that takes many of the social needs into consideration, so putting SDOH issues on the map. And probably the most financially beneficial part of the whole approach is kicking out the private sector PBM players and creating a single state PBM. So big things happening in the middle of the country.
Who says innovation starts on the coasts, right?
That's right.
All right. Dave, do you see any companies coming into the Medicaid managed care space? And what are they trying to do? And do you think they can do it?
Well, I'm going to pick up where Julie left off, saying what's fascinating about Medicaid is the incredible level of innovation that's occurring at the individual state levels in how to meet the care needs of this growing population that could be, as I said earlier, as much as 25% of Americans by the end of this year. You know, in addition to Ohio, North Carolina, Massachusetts, Minnesota, California have all done very, very interesting things with their Medicaid populations in trying to push toward managed care solutions. And you know, I'm a broken record on this topic, but when I keep saying we're not going to change the way we deliver healthcare until we change the way we pay for healthcare, when you look at Ohio, that's exactly what they've done. They're changing the way they pay for healthcare. They're expanding it to look at the overall health of the population. So by necessity, social determinants come into the equation and financial risk shifts to those groups that are taking responsibility for the care management of distinct populations. One company I did want to highlight in Ohio is CareSource Ohio, which has been a long time nonprofit state player in the Medicaid space and very effective. And they signed a partnership earlier this year with Welsh Carson to take their model and expand it to other states. So it will be a for-profit company in other states, obviously, with the PE money behind it. But I think that shows the kind of momentum that's behind Medicaid managed care. And the two biggest players are Molina and Centene. And you've seen each of them make very big investments in mental health services, again, because they have to be more holistic in how they deliver care. It's also was interesting for me to see Humana, United, and Anthem in the Ohio sweepstakes, because the big commercial insurers typically haven't been as active in Medicaid, but maybe this is an early sign that there's enough critical mass now in real Medicaid managed care for these players to come in and bring everything that they have with it. Medicaid in this country tends to be the payer of last resort, both in terms of income and service. So that's why you see Medicaid paying for things like dentistry, skilled nursing, mental health services, and the like. Over half the births in this country are now Medicaid insured. The great company here in Illinois, FQHC, called Erie Health, that's actually able to cost shift. They have arrangements with some of the big health systems here, notably Northwestern and Rush, to do births at their facilities. And they make enough of a profit on it to cover costs of adults that don't qualify for Medicaid services. So lots of innovation. And I pay attention to the Medicaid space because I think by virtue of necessity, there will be more innovation there than in either Medicare or commercial in terms of getting our head turned around right and trying to focus on how do we drive the best outcomes for the lowest cost by focusing on prevention, chronic disease management, behavioral health, and overall well-being.
Yeah, using financial incentives to force delivery change. I love it. Thanks, Dave. Julie, anything to add to Dave's comments?
Well, I would just mention a couple of companies we partnered with that are really looking at how they can expand into Medicaid and underserved markets. So first would be groups that looks, it's a hybrid model addiction service, telehealth, bricks and mortar with a digital platform coming out. And no, this is opioid addiction treatment. And they have started to really work with health plans in a very innovative set of relationships to expand services to those who are most in need. So you're going to start to see innovators work with health plans on arrangements that allow for more of a risk-based approach to this work. And Ginger's doing the same thing. You know, some of Ginger's competitors are literally just enabling a cheaper fee-for-service model. And Ginger's building a case rate that can work with plans to act as a triage where they can take risks to really help multiple populations, not just commercial, those who typically access, you know, behavioral health therapy. And the last I'd mention is Unitas, and other players in the Unitas space are Aunt Bertha, Socially Determined. And the fact that these companies exist and are being funded and are being adopted is amazing because they are coordinating care for many populations, but certainly Medicaid underserved. It's the social care they're coordinating that lives outside of any kind of clinical care, but they're coordinating it with the clinical environment. And to see these companies actually do what they're doing, it's going to enable a whole different way that we can actually be supporting the Medicaid population. So I find the innovation very exciting.
Well, thanks to both. I definitely think I could pass a semester final on Medicaid after this. Now, as always on the roundup, let's talk about next week. Julie, what are healthcare subject matter experts talking about next week?
Well, I think I've probably talked about this a little bit before, but I think the next new thing we're going to see is people talking about caregivers. So I'm hoping that we're going to start seeing more innovation and discussion about caregivers.
Dave, what's the healthcare water cooler conversation next week?
I've agreed to debate Bernie Sanders economist Jerry Friedman on the relative merits of single versus multi-payer healthcare reform. Jerry literally wrote the book on Medicare for All. So I'm hoping everybody's talking about that, Dave.
All right. I'll be there. Thank you, Julie. And thank you, Dave. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on the Healthcare Now Radio Network, iTunes, Spotify, and other streaming services. Subscribe now and don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.